Call to order this hearing of the Tax Reform Division of the Senate Committee on Taxes, Wednesday, February 13th, 2013. The first order of business is review and approval of the minutes. Are there any corrections? Seeing none, offered, Senator Eaton moves approval of the minutes as presented. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. This morning, we're going to be dealing directly with the general topic of tax expenditures. All of you have a binder that has the tax expenditure budget. And also, you have a report that was done with the Department of Revenue and with other consultants. We've asked the department prior to hearing Senator Reinert's bill, which acts on one of the recommendations, creating a tax review review commission, tax expenditure review commission, to present the highlights of that report from February 2011 to us this morning. And I'm pleased to welcome Mr. Wilson, Dr. Wilson, who is the Director of Tax Research for the Department of Revenue. And you do have that report in your binders, or in your folders, rather. And I would encourage you to take a look at it. Dr. Wilson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record again, Paul Wilson, Director of Tax Research from the Minnesota.
Could you move the mic closer to you, please?
Sorry.
Thank you.
For the record, Paul Wilson, Director of Tax Research at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And I'm pleased to be here today. This report, Tax Expenditure Review Report, the subtitle is Bringing Tax Expenditures into the Budget Process. And I think that subtitle is important because the whole focus here is to bring tax expenditures into the budget in the same sense that direct expenditures are in the tax in the state budget process. The study was mandated under a provision of Omnibus Tax Bill in 2010. It was released in February 2011. And there was a presentation to the Senate Tax Committee in February of 2011 with PowerPoints and much more than I'm going to do here today. As the chair says, this was actually prepared. We worked closely with them, but by five consultants, five academics, Marshall Blumenthal from the University of St. Thomas, R. Kolombakidis from University of Minnesota's Applied Economics Department, John Spry from University of St. Thomas, Jenny Wall from Carleton College, all professors of economics, and Jay Kodrowski from the Humphrey School at the University of Minnesota. And Jay is here today, so I feel a little, maybe he should be doing this. But anyway, I'm doing it. I want to make one comment about my report itself. When this was released on the transmittal letter, it makes the comment, this study team, meaning the five of them, was responsible for drafting the Tax Expenditure Review Report and the recommendations within. And as a result, this report is not necessarily the Department of Revenue's perspective or opinion. So I'm going to be channeling the five today, the five authors today, which is uncomfortable when one of them is behind me, sitting
we
behind
understand.
Me.
But there, we understand be that. Them, okay. So. And we asked you because it was the was done under the direction, or the contracts
correct.
Went out from the Department of Revenue, we respect the independent work of the consultants, but produced by the part.
And Madam Chair, and I was in all the meetings, so it's not. I'm not trying to swear off the responsibility. I'm just saying that.
Okay.
The goal, obviously, is to of the report, the people who wrote the report, the goal would be to have tax expenditures undergo a regular comprehensive review process similar to direct expenditures. And I would say that the bill you're going to hear, Senate File 53, the purpose statement of that is perfectly reflects what the purpose statement of the report would have been as well. The report also emphasizes the importance of trying to get tax expenditures to show up in the budget pages, consolidated funds report or general fund report, and that's a different process, and I won't say much about that today, but if there are questions on that, we can talk about that. I want to start with just an example, a quotation from page 28 of the report to highlight why this is important. On page 28, they're giving an example of the tuition assistance, tuition tax credit. And tuition tax credit, of course, is a tax expenditure. A tuition grant program would be a direct expenditure. And so this is their comparison in the report. Consider tuition assistance for college students. A tuition grant program requires the governor and the legislature to appropriate money every budget cycle. Officials face a clear question. Should the program be increased, decreased, modified, or even eliminated? A decision is made every 2 years. On the other hand, a tuition tax credit of equal cost would have no regular review after it's enacted. It could double in cost with little notice. Its cost appears nowhere in the budget documents. Now, it is in the tax expenditure budget, but would not be in any budget documents other than that. And it's not included in the state expenditure totals. It takes legislative action to fund the grant program. It takes only inaction to fund the tax credit once it's enacted. And so the idea is that tax expenditures really are treated completely different in the budget process. The review process is an attempt to sort of bring it more into similarity, at least. No longer let tax expenditures operate on autopilot. They should face the same scrutiny, and their costs should be as transparent to the public as direct expenditures. The report has some tough slogging parts of it. I would say Chapter 2 of the report has an awful lot of details. I'm going to talk mostly about Chapters 4 and 5 and the recommendations that are related to those chapters because they're most closely related to the bill that you're hearing, but I'll mention some other things as well. The report recommends formal evaluation over an 8-year cycle of all tax expenditures, but it focuses on high priority items in the first few years. So the report wants to set up a permanent process, not just a one-time evaluation, but a permanent process, ongoing, sort of a permanent process. The report also sets criteria by which we should determine which tax expenditures have the highest priority, and those would be the ones to be evaluated first. Now, this was an interesting process, because trying to figure out which ones should be looked at first and trying to actually make a list of which items should be high priority makes you think about what the evaluation process is supposed to do. And so the report lists on pages 24 and 26, it lists the top 12, according to the five authors. It has a list of the top 12 by each income type. So what are the top 12 that this group thought should be evaluated first in income tax? The top 12 in sales, the top 12 in corporate. And property tax has so few, the top 12 I think is all of them, but nevertheless, they're listed there. Trying to determine the priority there is to say where is the evaluation likely to do the most good? Where would doing an evaluation be most likely to have a change in the program itself or the tax expenditure itself? And I'm not going to go through the criteria individually, but Chapter 4 does that and does a very good job of sort of summarizing. I would say a couple things. Tax expenditures are not all created equal. Some tax expenditures, if you repeal them, you'll actually make things much more difficult. You'll increase complexity by getting rid of some tax expenditures. And so those were given very low priority by the commission.
What's an example of one of those?
And the examples are a lot of federal conformity items which affect the timing of taxes. Now, not every federal conformity item, but the ones that affect the timing, depreciation, IRA treatment, those things, if we disconnect from federal law on those, people would have to keep two different sets of books for tax purposes for many, many years. That's an added complexity, and again, it's just the timing issues it applies to. This doesn't apply to the itemized deductions, for example, but it applies to the timing issues, and there are a lot of them. In the tax, the recent update bill that you've been looking at, almost all of them, well, not almost all of them, but a large number of those are timing issues. And conforming to them, even though they are seen as tax expenditures in the tax expenditure book, there's no real question but that the best policy is to conform to those. So we shouldn't spend a lot of time evaluating a tax expenditure that clearly on the face of it is one we ought to conform to. So you can eliminate some that way. There are other tax expenditures where the problem, again, income tax is an example here, where we would not have the information to administer them. If we have an exclusion at the federal level and the exclusion amount does not show up on the tax return because it's an exclusion, not a deduction or an exemption, deduction would show up, but exclusion does not. If it doesn't show up on the tax return, it doesn't show up in a 1099 reporting, and it doesn't show up on a W-2, then really we have no way of knowing what it is. And in some cases, the taxpayer doesn't even know what it is. So a lot of fringe benefits, the smaller fringe benefits, don't show up anywhere. Again, we would have a hard time disconnecting. It's probably not even worth doing too much work to evaluate that because the starting point is going to be, of course, we want to conform to those because not to conform. If the feds change their law and tax it, we might want to tax it. But if the feds are where they are now, we wouldn't. So a lot of what the group did was to think about where the biggest differences are, where we could do the most good. I want to say a little bit more about the evaluation process and the criteria just a little bit. But I would say Washington State's the only state that has this kind of a revolving process over a 10-year cycle to evaluate tax expenditures. And they start out doing every tax expenditure the same, and now they're not anymore. Now they do, every year they do 13 full evaluations, 10 expedited evaluations, and 32 expedited light evaluations. And these would be in the expedited light category because basically you're not gonna say much about them and that they're desirable. So again, I would say allowing some flexibility about which tax expenditures are done first. I'm not sure that doing all sales tax at one time is necessarily the best thing. I think that whoever decides how to set the priorities is which ones get evaluated first and which ones get evaluated together, that may be a decision for the group doing the evaluations rather than necessarily. There's some problems with trying to be too specific in law about some of those. The second question, who is in charge? The reports wanted a commission. Wanted a commission appointed by the governor, House, and Senate, a permanent commission. Again, this is a tax reform preservation commission, if you like. It's at least, if we had tax reform, it would be a tax reform preservation commission. It's sort of ongoing looking at those issues. But who does the work? Well, the commission, I mean, this group, the tax review panel, did suggest that the Department of Revenue did most of the work because we have the data. Or we could hire consultants to do some of the work. But the work obviously has to be done by us. And you could hire outside consultants to do some of it. We have outside consultants doing the Angel Investment Credit review right now. That is an evaluation of a tax credit. So you could follow that model as well and have the work done by an outside group. I would say that we're not necessarily equipped to do this work in the Department of Revenue. There's a quote on page 29 of the study. It says, even though a revenue agency may be skilled at administering a tuition tax credit, it may still lack the tools and expertise needed to judge the educational outcomes of that credit. Program evaluation training is more important than an intimate familiarity with the tax law. So program evaluation skills are a little bit different. And if you want to think about this as a program evaluation process, that's different than revenue estimating. So the skill set is different, and so it's not quite clear. I'm not quite clear who would do it, okay, but you'd need different skills than we have in our research division right now. A couple of evaluation issues that are addressed in the report. There's a real question about evaluation because you have to know what the purpose is. And you don't have purpose statements in law in Minnesota. You've got a few now under a mandate. But if you don't know what the purpose is, it's hard to evaluate it. The itemized deduction for mortgage interest, is the goal to promote home ownership, or is the goal to increase spending on homes or to give homeowners a break? If the idea is to give homeowners a tax break, you can't criticize it, right? Because it does that. It does that very well. So how you state the purpose really affects how well the goal, how you do the evaluation. I would say that the people, I'm channeling again, mm-hmm. The purpose statements of the type that are put in law recently are not particularly helpful in an evaluation setting because they're too specific, they're too narrow. An evaluation should be done on basic tax principles, and sometimes if you say the goal of this credit is to help the people who get the credit, that doesn't help you. That's not a purpose statement in the sense that makes any help for evaluation. So it's nice to think that we should have purpose statements for things so we know what to evaluate against, but sometimes they may not be particularly helpful. The second thing that I think the group would want to point out is that the goal here is not repeal a tax expenditure or renew it. That should not be the goal of the evaluation process, and that should not be the question addressed. Should it be repealed or should it be kept? The question should be, can it be improved as well? And you have to look at other options. What else could be done instead? I'm afraid too often the evaluations are is an up and thumbs up, thumbs down kind of thing. And in the report on page 24, there's a quote in there. And again, no reason you have to turn to it. But page 24, we must emphasize these lists that we've made here are not hit lists. The fact that Working Family Credit, I think, was on the top of one list made some people uncomfortable. These are not hit lists. We don't suggest that the listed items are the prime candidates for appeal. The question is, can these be improved? The Working Family Credit, one thing to look at for the Working Family Credit is the two-tiered system we have now, which is very different from the federal credit. Does that make sense? It was put into effect many years ago for a reason. Should we go to just simply a straight percent of the federal credit? That ought to be an option, and when you evaluate the Working Family Credit, that's the kind of question that ought to be asked. We're not sort of saying, should we get rid of it or should we cut it back only, but can it be restructured? Same thing is true of itemized deductions. If you evaluate an itemized deduction, how about a credit? What would be the effect if you change that to a credit instead of an itemized deduction? It has a different effect, and those questions ought to be done, ought to be included in the evaluation. What if we limited charitable contributions deductions to amounts above a threshold? Would that, how that change how well our goals are being achieved? Can the R&D credit be changed to make it more effective in meeting its goals? So again, the idea of evaluation is not just thumbs up or thumbs down, but it's basically saying, first of all, is it doing its job, but also can it do its job better? Can we do things more accurately? The other thing, though, that we ought to be asked is, should this be turned into a direct expenditure program? And there was a real interest in the group in saying, you know, the tax system should be used only when the expenditure system doesn't work as well. I would say that most of the tax credits that run through deed, I'm channeling again, I shouldn't say I, but this group would say most of the tax expenditures that run through deed, where they determine a tax credit, it's refundable, it gets put on a tax return, they get the money, the check could be sent directly from deed. It would be exactly the same result. There's absolutely nothing that the Department of Revenue does in that process except take a statement from deed that they should get this money and we send them the money. It's refundable. It's not dependent on anything. There's no reason for that to go through the tax code other than that that's how it's structured. But those kinds of questions also, if something could be done with a direct expenditure instead, the question is why through the tax system then? Is there a rationale for it? I would say on evaluations, I know that the bill that you're going to hear lists sort of a bunch of questions that should be asked. I think flexibility is really important here as well. You're setting up a process. People who are running the process determine how best to do evaluations, what questions to ask. Maybe worth listing them, but I'm always afraid. It's a little bit, in Washington State, they have a list, and you look at the list, and the list, a lot of those questions are not relevant for some of them, and it's just, it becomes more of a cookie-cutter kind of an evaluation, where what you really want to do is say, how do we evaluate this one, and are different questions appropriate on this particular one? One size does not fit all. Just a couple more comments. I think expectations are too high. I think that would be one of the comments that would be made by this group. Expectations are too high in what you can get out of an evaluation process. And again, in this case, I would ask you to turn to page 17, or I'd ask you to. But because on page 17, there's some statements about economic development benefits, or at least that kind of thing, that I think this is a group of academics. Okay, these are the people that know how this kind of work would be done. And so this is not the Department of Revenue necessarily saying this. These are the specialists in the area. These are tax people who know how to do evaluation work. Item 3 there at the bottom of page 17, proponents of tax expenditures often claim that such provisions will increase the growth of employment or income in Minnesota. These impacts are particularly difficult to determine in part because available economic models are often blunt tools not designed to estimate the effect of a particular tax provision. Existing economic models are generally unable to differentiate among alternatives and very different tax incentives. So if you're giving corporations money, it matters how you're giving it to them, not just that you're giving it to them. So an R&D credit, dollars of R&D credit should have a different effect than dollars of a rate reduction. And the models are just not set up to do that very well. Because the impact of a $100 million tax cut for a specific industry presumably will depend on the structure of that incentive, not just its magnitude. What's more, the tax expenditure generally results in reduced tax revenue, but the state budget must be balanced. The impact of a single tax expenditure must be evaluated as part of a balanced budget. Exemption from sales tax either means a higher sales tax rate, an increase in some other tax, or a reduction in state expenditures. So it's not obvious what assumptions should be used to make the budget balance. Assuming that nothing else changes, though, is not legitimate. Those of you who have heard of the REMI model, the REMI people we don't have that model in the Department of Revenue, but the people who teach the REMI model, the people who make the REMI model, always say any evaluation of a change should be revenue neutral. And they say you got to change something else so that you have a balanced budget and then look at the economic impacts. You can't just change the tax impact and say what happens. Well, that makes it more difficult, and you're not going to see the same kind of results. No one disputes the fact, to continue, that some tax structures are more likely to stimulate economic growth than others. However, it's unrealistic to expect that the tax expenditure evaluation process will be able to pinpoint the secondary impacts of alternative tax expenditures on the state's economic performance. And again, I would say this, keep in mind who was writing this. Laura Kalambakidis from the university, John Spry from St. Thomas, Jenny Wall from Carleton. These are people whose life has been in taxes. Okay, these are tax specialists. So it's not sort of us just sort of saying we don't want to do the work. Okay, I think the message here is important. So don't expect too much. And finally, the last thing I think they would say on evaluations is if it's important to do it right, and fund it. The report actually has a recommended funding level. Now, I must say this was an interesting part of the discussion. But they basically said, look, the angel investment credit, the evaluation of angel investment credit is funded at $100,000 level. And they were recommending 12 tax expenditures be evaluated each year, 12 big ones each year for the first few years, and then you do a bunch of little ones later. If you do 12 of them at $100,000 each, that's $1.2 million. And you'll see that number show up. I'm not sure what page it's on, but you'll see that number show up in the report. Now, I'm not saying that's a magic number, but there are costs here. You will get sort of what you pay for. If there's no appropriation, nothing, no one's hired specifically to do this, and we're just trying to do a cookie-cutter approach, you're going to get that kind of an evaluation. And so just like trying to do everything equally is a problem. You also need to decide how much this is worth.
Dr. Wilson, to what extent is the Washington Commission funded? Do you know?
Madam Chair, I don't know that. I can check.
I think that would be of interest, since that is a fully operating group, as described by you. And I know that, and I absolutely agree with you, and I know that the Sunset Commission for state agencies and programs in the last biennium, had an exceptionally difficult time because they really didn't have any professional staff to help them, as opposed to like the Sunset Commission in the state of Texas has, like, I don't know what it was, dozens of employees that are engaged in the review of agencies and programs with regard to recommending that they be sunsetted. So I think it's a very important point that if this kind of evaluation is important to us, and I do think that one of the goals would be efficiencies as well as anything else, that we need to provide resources to make sure it happens appropriately, that would be any benefit to us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, you would be having evaluations done for, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of the program, so
exactly.
You've got to keep any cost in context. If you really think there's a chance you're going to make a change to the program and you want an evaluation of that, it's big dollars you're talking about in some of these cases. Two final comments on sunsets. I know that There'll be some discussion of sunsets because I think the bill has been amended related to sunsets. The commission actually was troubled by this group. I keep talking about this group was troubled by sunsets, partly because when you sunset something and they're all going to expire at a certain time, then the budget documents and the forecast would have to assume under current law they're gone. You have this huge jump in income showing up, and yet nobody in tax revenue, rather, and yet nobody really thinks the tax revenue is going to necessarily jump that much. The commission, this group,
I do believe Senator Reinert's dealt with that in the amendment to his bill.
This group did come up with a really interesting alternative, which deals with that, completely solves that problem, which is to say, yeah, set sunset dates, but if they actually sunset. Not renewed, then the rate of that tax would be adjusted downward, but revenue neutral. That means there would be no adjustment in the forecast because you're either going to change the rate or you're going to renew these things. And yet it allows a sunset as sort of a forcing decision. Again, I would say I think the group would say if you're going to do a sunset, that's probably a better way to do it. But you don't mess up the budget forecast issues. But again, there are other questions. We know the federal government has extender bills every couple years, and they extend for another 2 years, another provision, extend it again. We don't want to get necessarily into that budgeting situation in Minnesota. So there are questions about exactly what best to do, certainly, with sunsets. And one final comment. They also talk about budget documents and getting tax expenditures into the budget documents. Very important to try to say, look, when you look at the budget documents, where are the tax expenditures? They don't show up anywhere. And so the suggestion, and strongly stated in the report, is to basically, at least on the consolidated funds report, have a total revenues page that starts with the total revenues before any tax expenditures and shows the size of them and shows the net, which is what we now see. But have them show up somewhere in the budget documents. Related to that is a recommendation that the tax expenditure budget itself be rescheduled so that it's done in the budget year and be completed by early fall of that year, early fall before the budget year. Right now, the tax expenditure budget is done off cycle. It's done in the year that you're not a budget year. Mm-hmm. So it isn't coming out as part of the budget process, and it's not integrated in any way with budget documents. That would require, I think, certainly require a change in law, but it also raises questions about whether the tax incident study would have to be switched as well, given that both of them take resources in our division. So that's a separate issue, but that was highly recommended as well in the report. Those issues, we've talked to M&B about trying to get ways to get tax benefit into the budget documents, but nothing has happened at this point. But we've had discussions with them on that issue. In conclusion, I think the group, the authors, would strongly support the notion of a tax commission being set up and evaluation process for tax expenditures. Quibbles would be with maybe having too tight constraints or too much specificity. We'd probably think that more flexibility might be useful in terms of the rules set forth for the commission.
Thank you very much, Dr. Wilson. Are there any questions for him? Senator Reinert?
Thank you, Chair Rast. Dr. Wilson, my first question is, I think you brought up a valid point around the appropriation issue. Could you give us a comparison? You know, the tax incident study, I think, is a stellar study and I think acknowledged as one of the better studies in the country. How many staff do we have that work on that? About how much does it cost us to generate the tax incident report? Because I think that would be a roughly equivalent document to what we might want in the end here.
Dr. Wilson?
The tax incident study, we've got one person that works full-time on it. We've got a lot of things flow into that model, so it's hard to be, but there's only one person that's sort of full-time on it. When we get to this time of the year, we've got a few more people working on it, but the income tax model flows into it, the consumption tax model flows into it. Those have been built up over a long time, so a lot of the costs are sunk costs because they're there. There is a cost in the front of our reports that actually says what it costs. And I don't honestly know what the number is for the incident study. My guess is it's about 100,000. But that's, again, to update a report from previous years that is being already sort of done. So in the evaluation process, you're looking at in depth at things that are going to be new each time. It's not a repetitive process as much. I do think that the second time you do things might be helpful, but 10 years is a long time. If you have 10 years before you do it again, nobody remembers. So you're not going to get much benefit of the renewal process. Tax expenditure budget itself, the cost stated in here is $120,000. Again, we have a lot of that work is actually done by student interns in the summer. So there's a lot of fairly low cost labor involved in that as well. But I guess I would say that, you know, if we think about the angel investment credit evaluation, there the attempt is that's actually going to include surveys of the businesses who participate in the program. It's actually going to do quite a bit of work in terms of trying to get more information. That's different than just answering a few questions. And if you want an evaluation that really looks at, tries to look deeper at things, it just costs more. It takes more time. In some ways, if you want a narrower, I'm told it's $90,000 for the incident study, by the way. But this next one will be higher because if it has federal taxes in it, they'll have an additional cost on it. So, I mean, I'm not quite sure the comparison is quite appropriate. It's a good way to start thinking about it, what these other reports cost.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Dr. Wilson, did the group talk at all about any mechanisms to force action short of just having the automatic sunset? I know you gave an option for reducing the rate as opposed, but was there any other mechanisms that they talked about to force the review short of the sunset?
Senator Scully, there was a, I should have mentioned this, the report does recommend that when these are evaluated, when they're scheduled to be evaluated, that the commission would have to make recommendations on each of these to the governor and to the legislature. So that's at least the process would be we've got recommendations, but I think the sunset was the only sort of forcing mechanism in there.
Anything else is a forcing?
Yeah, I can't think of anything else that was really. There was a lot of discussion about trying to make sure that something happened, that the reviews actually made a difference. I think that's partly why it was decided not to just make it. I mean, the group didn't want to make it just a revenue department report because it'll just be another report. But setting up the commission has the advantage of having a little more clout. And if the commission says we have these recommendations, then you're more likely to get a response to it at least somehow. And so you could write something in that there must be evaluation. If you don't sunset, you're not going to have a forcing mechanism that's as strong, certainly.
Anyone else? Senator
Gazelka. Is Senator Reinert going to be presenting the
yes,
bill?
Yes, I just asked him to sit at the table in case he had questions for Dr. Wilson at this point. Senator Reinert again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Wilson, when you look at Washington State, who you said is the state who is doing something along these lines, how do they address that issue of forcing a proactive or encouraging or incenting or guiding a proactive decision by the legislature?
Dr. Wilson.
Madam Chair, Senator Reinert, Washington State does not have a sunset provision. I'm pretty sure it doesn't have a sunset provision. There are recommendations. The commission has to make recommendations. A couple things are different about Washington State. Remember, Washington State doesn't have an income tax, so you're talking about mostly the sales tax as being the bulk. But in Washington State, if you look at the actual, there's a case where you look at the actual results of the process. How many times has a change been made in any tax expenditure as a result of the evaluation? And I haven't looked recently, but that would be an important question to look at. And when we looked at it at the time the study was being done, it didn't look like it was, like the evaluation process was changing much in terms of, it was doing an evaluation, there were recommendations made, but in most cases, things just went on as before. I should caution, I have not looked at it since then, so maybe it's having more of an effect. But Washington State would be a good one to look at and say, how much difference is this making, and is there some way you can design something so it makes more of a difference if you want it to make a difference in terms of... So I'd look at the there's a case where you can actually look at the outcomes, because they have a report, they have recommendations, and then they will say what recommendations were accepted, and the materials are all available on the site. So you can actually trace through and see what they've done. But in most cases, it's just things are continued. So it's I wouldn't say it should be taken as too negative toward the process. I think the question is more, is there something that can be done? That's why I think focusing on a few important ones and doing more in depth might be different than trying to do a sort of a once over lightly review of a lot of them. You may be less likely to have a difference. Whereas if you really take a smaller number and really dig in, and particularly if you choose the ones where you think it's most likely that it would make a difference, you might be much more likely to have an effect in terms of legislation. So.
Anyone else? Thank you very much, Dr. Wilson and the department. We appreciate your being here today and presenting to us. So now we have before us Senate File 53, Senator Reinert, Tax Expenditure Review Act. And Senator Reinert has an amendment, and I believe the summary from Senate Counsel reflects the amendment. Is that correct, Senator Reinert?
Yes, Chair Rest.
So on behalf of Senator Reinert, Senator Eaton moves the A2 amendment. Because all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Because the bill has in it setting up a commission that involves legislators, Senator Scoy and I discussed that we would move this bill out of the division to the full committee. So that it could be reviewed by the state and local government committee. And Senator Reinert, I would also advise you to check with the chair of the rules committee, because generally when a commission or task force or whatever is set up that involves legislators, the rules committee always requests that it review it. But eventually going through that process, then if it's successful at every turn, that it would come back to the tax committee for consideration as a part of the omnibus bill. I mean, that's kind of the path. And I don't want you to be surprised at any point in that regard. And today we're looking at even though we can look at any part of it, we have our Senator Reinert, as I understand it, has requested that we concentrate on the work that you're asking to be done here rather than the makeup of the commission or the appointment, and so that the state and local government, which has a set of guidelines for commissions, will let that work be done when you present it there rather than here, although obviously members can ask you questions about that part. So I just wanted to make sure we all start off on the same path with regard to this bill. Senator Reinert, we now have Senate File 53 as amended before us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. I would start off just by mentioning that there is, when we go to state and local government, we do have an amendment that's going to deal with composition and make some changes there as well. So if those questions come up, members, I'm happy to address that. But the language you have before you is not the language that I intend to stay. It just wasn't something that we could have ready yet for this morning. So, again, Madam Chair, thank you for having me in this bill here this morning. I thank Dr. Wilson for being here to speak. I've also invited Jay Kudrowski from the Humphrey Institute, who led the effort on the tax expenditure report, to testify, and also Bob DeBoer from the Citizens League, who ironically, or maybe fortuitously, had a meeting this morning at the Minnesota History Center on tax expenditures. So I think he's well prepared. Members, tax expenditures are spending, and I think those of us who've spent time with taxes are aware of that. And I want to thank Senator Ortman. We heard this bill in 2011 or a similar version in conjunction with the original debut of the tax expenditure report. The concern that I have, and I think we all ought to have on tax expenditures, is that they're not just spending, they're preferential spending. When one person gets a break, others pay more, because at the end of the day, the bill is still the same. We have nearly 300 of them in state tax code, both in the income tax as well as the sales tax. Some of them we would look at and likely all agree are worthy and ought to continue. Mortgage interest deduction was an example brought up this morning. Might be a likely one. Some we would likely vigorously debate, and their outcome in terms of staying in tax code might be unknown. Some of them we would likely say no longer are a priority given limited resources, and we would let expire. But the bottom line, members, is we don't know. We don't know the purpose, as Dr. Wilson outlined. And when we don't know the purpose, I mean, I think all of you know I'm a college teacher, I believe in doing our homework. If we don't know the purpose, we don't know if it actually accomplishes a public goal that we think is worthy of a state expenditure. For most, we don't know what they cost in terms of uncaptured revenue. And perhaps what's most concerning is they're on autopilot. And I thought Dr. Wilson started us off in exactly the right point with the example he used of college tuition. If we decided to spend on college tuition, either giving money to the institution to help lower tuition costs or funding the state grant program to help make tuition affordable, that's a decision we have to revisit every 2 years as part of our budget process. We have to. We have to make that decision. However, if we were to do a tax break, some sort of tax expenditure along the same lines, we would never visit it again. It would just be there and continue to grow. And I think members, I look around the table, and most of us have been here for at least a couple of years and have seen some difficult budget decisions. We can't really afford to do that anymore. So the bill does a couple things, and it's meant to address some of the recommendations from the budget process. And members and Chair Ress, you may have this in your files as well from 2 years ago, but if not, I'm happy to provide copies. It's just the PowerPoint overview from when Dr. Kudrowski presented this report 2 years ago. And for those who don't decide to take the report to bed with them tonight and read through it cover to cover, it's a very nice, I think, executive summary of the report. And Madam Chair, I'm happy to make copies of it and share it with you. But just to hit a few highlights that we are trying to get at, and I'm not married to any of the language in this bill, other than the concept that we have to figure out a way to review these. So I just want to be upfront about that. Some of their top five recommendations were that the tax expenditures be fully integrated into the biennial budget process, requiring the governor and the legislature to make explicit decisions about whether to extend, repeal, modify, or replace a particular expenditure. The same thing we would do on a straight-up expenditure within the budget process. Every 2 years, we'd have to make a decision. That they be revenue neutral, as Dr. Wilson mentioned, that a sunset would be revenue neutral for each tax expenditure following its evaluation. It would expire, and the rate for the tax would be adjusted downward to hold the revenue constant. And I would encourage this committee, and I'm going to encourage the broader tax committee to think about that concept. If all we do is ask for a report, I think, members, my fear is that we don't take action on the results of that report. I think we as legislators ought to think about some way to force ourselves to make a proactive decision. That's not what's currently in the bill, but I think it is a point we still ought to discuss. Tax expenditures should be classified by core function to the extent possible so they can be compared to direct expenditures that serve the same function. So we have a direct expenditure on tuition that we have to revisit every 2 years. We could do a tax expenditure and not have to revisit it. Somehow we need to set up a system that forces us to compare because they're both spending. They're both state spending. The appropriate appropriations committees examine tax expenditures alongside any direct expenditures for their purview that serve the same function. The tax committees would review any suggested changes. And state budget summaries include total state expenditures for each tax to show their fiscal impact on gross tax revenue. So, Madam Chair, essentially what the bill does is set up One, a commission that is comprised of members appointed by the legislature and also appointed by the governor to review tax expenditures on a regular schedule, and then it sets out the schedule for that review. Now, the bill as originally written called for an automatic expiration unless the legislature proactively decided to continue a particular tax expenditure due to concerns from a lot of interested parties, as well as, frankly, a concern from revenue that they weren't sure how they would forecast for that. And Dr. Wilson spoke to that a few minutes ago. What the amendment we adopted this morning did was change those automatic expirations to a required review. And then that review is submitted to the chairs of the Senate and House Tax Committee. So, Madam Chair, I'm happy to stand for questions, but this is an attempt to try to get at this large amount of spending we do as a legislature that really goes unseen and on autopilot.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Reinert. I do appreciate your work on this issue and the fact that you're back again. I'm a very persistent person, too, and I appreciate that. I'm sorry I missed your explanation of the A2. Would it take out the automatic sunset provisions? And then what would be in its place?
Senator Ortman, yes. The automatic expirations are removed, and instead language around review is inserted. So, for instance, you can see you've got the copy of the amendment, but page 3, line 22, scheduled to expire is replaced by subject to review, and that's repeated throughout that section. So automatic expiration is changed to subject to review, review schedule, required review.
Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair and Senator Reinert, can you tell me what you mean by subject to review then? So instead of it being an automatic sunset, that information will come back to the legislature or to the commission? And we will be asked to review it, but not necessarily make any changes. There will be no assumption that anything will change unless we take further action. So we're basically just being notified.
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman, essentially, I'm going to be honest, it's not my preferred route. I don't think it's much of a hammer or whatever analogy you want hanging over the legislature to take proactive action on these large amounts of spending. But it does seem to give a lot of interest groups comfort. And it does address this concern revenue has in terms of forecasting. My personal opinion on forecasting is, yeah, you'll start out with this larger number, but then we as a legislature would have to make decisions on, do we just reduce rates and not collect that revenue? Do we directly spend it on something, or do we indirectly spend it through a tax expenditure? But I've been here, this is my fifth year, I understand the concept of bite of an apple versus eating the whole thing. So I think this is a comfortable place for a lot of people to start. But Senator Ortman, to directly address your question, yes, the commission would provide the Senate and House tax committees with its review and its recommendations, and we would then have to make decisions on whether we actually take action on them or not.
Senator Ortman, I would direct your attention to line 1.7 of Senator Reinert's amendment that is not specific to action by the commission that he's proposing, but is specific to anyone who proposes a new tax expenditure, what their requirements are. And it states on page 5 of the bill, an expiration date for the tax expenditure that may not, this is one of the requirements that would have to happen in any legislation that's proposed, that it include the following provisions, and that includes an expiration date for the tax expenditure that may not exceed 12 years from the day the provision takes effect and must correspond to the expiration date or review schedule for other tax expenditures in the same tax area that are listed in the subdivision one. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Reinert. I would say the first big hurdle that we had looking at this bill the last time was the forecast and how the automatic sunset would impact the forecast, but there were others. And, 12 years, I don't know why you picked 12 years and whether that's sufficient or not, but The second big hurdle is once the legislature acts to pass what we would call a tax expenditure or a tax credit or something, then taxpayers come to rely on that. And now any time that a tax expenditure is eliminated, you're raising somebody's tax burden. Whether we want to say it that way or not, the person that's affected sees it as having to pay more in taxes. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's probably the biggest impediment to doing something here. I can understand you're trying to take some of the objectionable part out of that, but that part still remains. And that doesn't mean we shouldn't review them. I'm wondering, I think I would like this whole concept better if we were instead working on how do we change our budgeting and our bookkeeping in the state of Minnesota to account for these tax expenditures as an overall function of the budget. So our budget really is, you know, 20% higher, 50% higher than what we say it is because we're just not collecting that much in taxes. We've made some tax expenditure decisions in the tax bill. And I'm just not sure we're accounting for it all the way that would make most sense to a layperson trying to understand what is the state's budget. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't see that really addressed here. And I think that was one of the recommendations as well, which was to change the way we talk about this and change the way we budget for it.
Senator Ortman, I think if we go back to just a second, Senator Reinert, back to what a comment made by Dr. Wilson that when we're talking about these tax expenditures, the evaluation is not necessarily to do away with it, but to kind of like an up or down, but the evaluation should be geared toward improving it. And so the notion that you would automatically, by changing it in some way, that a taxpayer would incur an increased tax burden, from how I read the report and Senator Reinert's legislation, I don't think that that is that's a necessary conclusion. But Senator Reinert, if you want to comment.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm wondering if at some point I can invite Jay Kudrowski.
Sure.
And Mr. DeBoer from the Citizens League up, because I think some of these questions get, as I started off, I'm not married to anything particular. I'm married to the concept that we take some action around these in exactly the best way. I just want to try and provide the vehicle, and I thank you mm-hmm. for the opportunity to have the discussion. But they might have thoughts about Senator Ortman's question as well, because you're right, that is talked about in the report, as is this idea of just transparency, that they are out there and they don't get talked about. We don't make decisions about them. The general public doesn't know that they're there, other than in that very individual way, you know, I get that break. And one of the ones I enjoy, you know, as I've talked about this concept with, you know, regular folks at home, most people understand, Madam Chair, it's probably Duluth Days having their rally.
So, who is it?
It's Duluth Days today. So
I'm planning
and rally, so that might be it. I apologize.
It's your fault.
It is my fault, right. You know, the mortgage interest one is one most people understand because most people use and benefit from, but I'll oftentimes use the other, what I consider kind of the other end of the spectrum, and it's the deduction for a musical instrument. If you buy your child a musical instrument and you itemize, you can take a deduction for that. And it's one that most people have no idea. It doesn't incent them to buy a musical instrument. We don't know that it creates more musicians in Minnesota. What we know is at the end of the day, when people are going through their taxes, it's like, oh, you know, Tax EZ program says I can take a deduction for this. Great. You know, it's just rewarding a behavior that was already done. But is a tax expenditure. So, Madam Chair, with your permission, I'd like to invite Dr. Kudrowski to the table and to make a few comments, and then Mr. DeBoer from the Citizens League.
They can both come forward right now, I think.
Thank you.
And as they do, I want to concur with Dr. Wilson's comment about how constraining putting purpose language, not dealing with a purpose, but purpose language is in the statute. And at some point, Senator Reinert, I'm going to move to delete section one. Dr. Kudrowski.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jay Kudrowski. I'm a senior fellow at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. I'm not here today to speak on behalf of the university or the Humphrey Institute. The Humphrey School. Even I keep forgetting we've changed the name. I do want to speak, though, as a consultant to the Department of Revenue in developing the report that we sent you in 2011 and we're speaking about today. If you turn to page one, you'll see the recommendations in the report. I want to highlight a couple of those. And let me start from the bottom rather than the top to respond to Senator Ortman's question. And that's that one of our recommendations was to fully integrate tax expenditures into the biennial budget process and include total expenditures for each tax in state budget summaries to show their fiscal impact on gross tax revenue.
Thank you.
You have a tremendous power to be able to legislate the way the governor presents the budget. And you could require that the governor present the gross revenues that the individual income tax or any other tax could produce and then show the deductions and the credits and how much those take away from the overall revenue, therefore making it transparent to the public what's happening. And by definition, depending on what the governor does, it also is that he continues to recommend those deductions, those tax expenditures. Or if he chooses, as this governor did in this session, to recommend changing some of those exemptions, in the case of the sales tax, that would be apparent as well. So that's an alternate way of getting at the problem of the sunset, is that you would have the governor propose each biennial session and the legislature dispose on that basis. Is that helpful?
Senator Ortman?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Kudrowski. That's exactly what I thought you were recommending, was
we
a
are.
Much broader discussion of how these decisions are impacting our budget one way or the other. And it doesn't mean that we should eliminate them. Many of them you would never even consider eliminating. But at least we would have it seems like we have almost a second set of books that we don't talk about at all. And I think in the interest of transparency and accountability, we really should.
Yeah.
Senator Gazelka, before he continues, did you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Wright, I just want to know if you could show me where in the bill it focuses on being revenue neutral, where if they eliminate a particular exemption, that tax area goes down. I tried to find it. I can't find it.
Senator Reinert?
Madam Chair, Senator Gazelka, it doesn't. And again, we've taken out all the expirations, so it's in the bill as currently amended, it's kind of a moot point.
Okay. So, Madam Chair,
is that clear? Because it will not, because he took that out, it has no impact on the forecast. So, what Dr. Wilson has said is, if you leave the expirations required in, then in order not to have an impact on the forecast, you would have to have a revenue neutral rate on whatever system within the overall tax system you were dealing with.
So, Madam Chair, I guess my question then is, as it is right now,
I'll hold on for a moment.
If this went forward and an exemption was reviewed and removed, that would be generating more revenue for the state?
Senator Gazelka, as I understand it, the review would be a recommendation, and absent any action by the legislature, there would be no impact. So,
all right. Thank you.
Madam Chair,
Dr. Kudrowski.
I'd like to see in the bill the provision that the governor has to, in fact, show the tax expenditures as part of his budget proposal. That would give much more weight to the tax expenditure report that's currently done as well, because it would be embedded in then the budget of the governor. The second from the bottom is this revenue neutral we've talked about. I don't think we need to talk any more about that. The third from the bottom, provide adequate funding for the Department of Revenue. This was a key consideration that we had currently in the bill with no funding. I don't think anything's really going to happen other than the Department of Revenue will scramble to try to support. So I think you need to do something in terms of an appropriation. We talked about $1 million per year. We thought it would be necessary to adequately fund consultants to work with the Department of Revenue. We wanted the Department of Revenue to be in charge of hiring those consultants, and they would report to the executive director of the commission in getting that work done. So that's critical. Fourth from the bottom, require evaluation to list and analyze selected alternatives to the current position. That also is important, not only that they comment on what's happening with a given tax expenditure, but what are the alternatives? Oftentimes, you could have a direct expenditure that would do the same thing as a tax expenditure. So listing those would be critical. Require the Tax Expenditure Commission to define a clear and measurable purpose for each tax expenditure. If you're going to evaluate tax expenditures, you really have to know what the legislature intended for that tax expenditure. And we were so strong in our belief there, we actually said that if the legislature doesn't supply such a provision, that it would be the job of the Tax Expenditure Commission to create one and recommend it to the legislature and use it for future evaluation. Prioritize which tax expenditures to evaluate the earliest. You have to decide which. The bill does that. I think that's of lesser importance. Create a Tax Expenditure Commission to oversee the evaluation process. In the creation of the Tax Expenditure Commission, the bill says that members have to leave after 4 years, two terms as I understand it. I think somebody ought to sit on the commission longer than that because they will be developing expertise, and you would like them to be able to use that expertise in looking at taxes. And if you think about it, no commissioner will look at a tax expenditure twice unless they've served for 12 years. So I think something more than 4 years would be good to improve the expertise and the continuity of the commission. And then the last one was we argued for an 8-year evaluation cycle. I don't think it matters that much whether it's 8 years, 10 years, or 12 years. Just that there is an evaluation cycle that everybody is following. Madam Chair, members of the committee, on my behalf personally, I support this legislation strongly and would urge you to send it on, and hopefully it will pass this session.
Thank you, Dr. Kudrowski. I think, Senator Reinert, you're getting lots of good suggestions, this is a work in progress, the language we have here before us is really a starting point.
That's correct, Chair.
Right. And I really do appreciate your openness to all kinds of changes and not being wedded to any particular provisions. Mr. DeBoer, you want to give your testimony, if you'd identify yourself, and then we'll go and see if members have, besides myself, with regard to that first section. I have another suggestion that I think would help right now that's a response to Dr. Wilson's comments about what needs to be reviewed for each one. I think we can make a change there that would accommodate his critique of that section. It could be very easily done. So I'll have those two amendments. But Mr. DeBoer, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bob DeBoer from the Citizens League, and wanted to just share a few comments about our feeling. We have a strong position in support of evaluating tax expenditures. I believe you got copies of our statement, hopefully handed out to you. I'm not going to go into the details of that statement because it's pretty consistent with what you've been hearing. We did look at the Department of Revenue's report. We thought it was an excellent piece of work to build on. We looked at a number of the other in our study group and a number of the other reports that have been done about state budget trends. But I think the main thing here is this has been an invisible budget to most Minnesotans, and it fails on measures of tax policy for accountability, for equity, and for efficiency in a number of ways. But mainly it's because we don't have a way to start looking at it yet. We haven't dug in and figured that out. And I'm so glad that Senator Reinert is doing that. I think it's no longer, the second handout you should have from us is from our Common Sense workshops across the state. And what we found when we brought some of these tax reform issues to Minnesotans was a much more nuanced understanding. We do these workshops where we give them a lot of good facts and they get to discuss, they get to actually vote on what they think is most important in real time. And what we found on tax expenditures was they thought it should be evaluated like the budget. And if you have that handout, in fact, it was far and away 60% said the legislature should consider these just as they consider spending when balancing the state budget. Now, we realize, you know, from a mechanism standpoint, that can't be done in the same way. But we think we have to start that process now. We're in the middle of a legislative session where a number of these tax expenditures are on the table as we speak. If we have a big deal and we do a lot with tax expenditures and then they can go back on autopilot for the next 25 years until we have another big deal, that is not sufficient. We need to evaluate on an ongoing basis. You know, the other thing is that the citizenry, if you look at these other two questions we have, when we asked them what tax reform means to you and they got to select two, the top response was ensuring that tax dollars are used wisely and efficiently. So the public isn't separating tax policy from good budgeting and good spending. They're actually making the connection. And I think that's really important as we look at this big package this session. So we're really concerned that this could kind of fall away and not get done, and that this seems like the best opportunity with a big package on the table. I think in closing, we're really kind of concerned, too, that if there isn't some way to push legislators to really consider this, if it isn't integrated, as Mr. Kudrowski said, in the governor's budget initially, in ways that, you know, really make it in your face, so to speak, so you have to deal with them. Because another report, it's not easy for legislators to just take on another job without something kind of putting it in there in an important way. And the main part of an evaluation process, I think, should be that we don't just pick them off here and there, that we actually have good information if people are doing something with tax expenditures. So rather than get into more detail, I think I'd stand for any questions on this.
Any questions or comments for Mr. DeBoer? Thank you. We also have one other testifier, Senator Reinert, Mr. Ager from the Minnesota Realtors. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. We appreciate the work you did on this report, Dr. Kudrowski, and I'm sure we'll be consulting with you in the future about it. Thank you.
Chair Rest, I think that's a very safe assumption.
Yes. Welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Paul Egger, Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Association of Realtors. I just want to thank Senator Reinert, not only this session, but when he carried this bill a couple of years ago, being willing to meet with us and to talk about some of the language issues. And I've really appreciated his flexibility in trying to get the language in the shape it should be in as this moves forward. So he's been a pleasure to work with. We do appreciate the amendment that was put on the bill that did strike the sunsetting. There's been a lot of discussion about the impact on the budget forecast, but let's not forget that there are people that make significant life decisions based on some of these credits and deductions in the tax code. And so I think it's important not to create that kind of uncertainty in the future as well as you approach these review deadlines. That taxpayers understand, you know, the state of the tax code, and it isn't a matter of not knowing what's going to happen after a certain point on the calendar. So I think that is a positive change. Suggestions on the language, Madam Chair. The amendment addresses a number of places in the bill where the term sunset or expiration was used. But there's still a couple of sections in the bill, and I'll just ask you to take a look at Section 10, which is the language that is a continuation by law, and maybe council can clarify this, but it appears to apply to more than just new tax expenditures. It still seems to apply to existing, and I don't know if that's language that as Senator Reinert's moving forward, that just needs to be some consistency with the A2 amendment and some of the language that's retained in the bill. There are a couple of other references, I think, to reauthorization. And again, if I'm misreading that and it only applies to new tax expenditures and then their reauthorization, then maybe the language just needs to be clarified that it doesn't apply to existing tax expenditures. So it's just some formatting issues that I think if Senator Reinert's willing to consider some additional language as he moves forward, be happy to work with them. The last comment is related to the commission kind of criteria that they're going to be reporting back to you. And one of the significant issues that this committee deals with and has been dealing with, Senator Scoy's carrying the bill on federal conformity for tax year 2012. On a bipartisan basis, we've been very proactive in addressing tax conformity early in sessions. And it seems that one of the criteria that the commission should be reporting back to the legislature on is just that issue itself of federal conformity. Which of these tax expenditures fulfill or passing along a tax benefit that's in the federal tax code and passing that along to Minnesota taxpayers. So we just suggest, and again, be happy to work with Senator Reinert if he's willing to consider something like that. It's just more information for you to consider as you move forward. With that, Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ager. Are there comments or suggestions? Then I think we can be taking a look at the bill. And Senator Reinert, I do concur with Dr. Wilson about huge cautions about putting purpose language in the statute. And so, and we routinely do not do that. And as important as it may be to review why things are happening, it should be in the direction and it should be in the language of the statute itself. So I'm going to move to delete section one. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails on the strength of Senator Scoy's vote. Thank you, Senator Scoy. Then I was also taken, if you'd look at Section 6, Senator Reinert, by Dr. Wilson's comments that these questions would not all apply lockstep to every expenditure. And I was wondering if counsel could suggest a way of making that more flexible, like somehow shall provide a report with, with the following appropriate information or where applicable. Would you have a problem with that? Inserting language like that, because not every single one, you don't want to force a consideration of a provision that it just doesn't apply to that given tax expenditure. Would you have an objection to that, Senator Reinert?
No, and Madam Chair, it sounds to me like you're suggesting line 3.21, a report of the following information for each, continuing on to line 3.22, tax expenditure. As appropriate.
Let's turn to Ms. Pollock and see if she has a suggestion to accomplish what we're looking at.
Madam Chair and members, Senator Reinert, I would suggest on line 3.21, after information, insert comma, where applicable, comma.
Yep.
Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Senator Scoy, would you move that amendment?
I'll move that.
Senator Scoy moves on line 3.21, following the word information, insert comma, where applicable, comma. Any comment? Let's see how many people we can get to vote for this one. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Any other suggestions to help Senator Reinert move this bill along as it goes to the full committee? Senator Orgman.
Madam Chair and Senator Reinert, I'm really interested in what was just said. I believe it was by Mr. DeBoer about the federal conformity. I think that would make this bill even more interesting. If you added in for the duties of the commission to report back on each element of conformity that was passed by the or open item of federal conformity, and reviewed, provided guidance, provided priorities, I think that would really help. I think that would make this a very strong commission, and it would add in, provide us some information that we don't regularly review and that the public doesn't regularly review. I think it would be great. I consider doing that before this bill hits full tax committee, and I offer my services to help in any way I can in drafting that. I'm sure there are lots of would-be parents of that. It's a great idea.
Senator Ortman, do you have any suggestion for language for that at this point? Nope. I mean, this is the committee where we've got the time. This is a committee where we can work on this.
Well, Ms. Pollack seems to be indicating that she has some suggestions for
Ms. Pollack, do you have a suggestion that would include a review of...
Madam Chair, somehow address
federal conformity.
It would be each open item of conformity. So whether it be open from 2011 or 2012 or newly opened, it would be any remaining unfunded item of federal conformity.
Ms. Pollack, do you have a suggestion for us for Senator Ortman?
Madam Chair and members, yes. On line 3.33, delete and. On 4.2, delete the period and insert a semicolon and. And then after line 4.2, insert clause 8. Each provision of federal tax conformity adopted by the legislature in the previous legislative session.
I don't think that's exactly
that's not what I think we're trying to accomplish.
It's like... Right now, I think maybe this is what it is. Right now, in the federal conformity that we are adopting, we're not doing Section 179 depreciation. We're not doing the standard deduction for married couples, et cetera. Is it those items, Senator Ortman, that you had in mind that they would review?
Well, and Madam Chair, what I'm getting at is what I consider to be an open item is one that has not been funded and extended to the taxpayers of Minnesota, whether it be.
But those would be examples.
Exactly. So
yes.
The ones that we haven't yet been able to fund, and so this year, if this commission were in existence and we're going to do this review, it would consider all of the ones that are in Senator Skoy's federal conformity bill this year because it would still be open. It hasn't actually been funded. It hasn't been extended to Minnesota taxpayers as a matter of law. And then anything from preceding years that...
Yeah, as well as the ones that aren't in his bill.
Correct.
That are
so
still
that,
open.
Yeah.
Is that... Ms. Pollack, is that language work? Or you think about what you need to say there, and Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to suggest perhaps using the word non-conforming items. Would that fill the bill?
We're having a little conference back there.
I have other questions, Madam Chair. I have other questions.
Senator Dietzick.
Discussing. So first I'm going to go back to, and some of these are actual questions because I don't know in other boards and commissions, do we usually have even number members? Because it appears in Section 3 for the membership, you've got three senators, three House members, and six public members, and so I don't know if that potentially creates a problem having an even number. And then I also don't know, it does not appear to have Senate confirmation, so I don't know if we confirm all other boards and commissions. Does the Senate confirm all other boards and commissions, and do we want to do that or need to do that? And then under terms, he has the two-year term. I don't know if we wanted to go for a four-year term.
Senator Reinert, that we had said we would, you know, let you deal with that in state and local, but I think we do have the time for you to respond to the the makeup, your suggested makeup.
Well, and again, Madam Chair, I'll just say there's an amendment to that rewrites that entire section. We actually increase the House and Senate appointments so that we can get the bipartisan, the equal representation from both parties in the body. It clarifies who the appointing authorities are in the Senate and in the House. They don't need confirmation by the Senate body. The only issue that came up today that is, I think, worth looking at before we go to state is the length of the term based on Dr. Kudrowski's comments. So, I apologize. The language that's in there around the composition of the commission will be substantially different before, not in form, but just in detail before state government.
Senator Reinert, while we're waiting, I also just have a comment on that. You know, if the legislative members are to be appointed by the governor, they have to go through a fairly extensive application process that includes background checks, that includes statements of economic interest, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they just can't be easily appointed by the governor to a commission like this without that process. And I would suggest that when you're redoing it, that you have the appropriate authorities within the legislature itself make the appointments, and in so doing, they would not have to go through that extensive application process, even if it's a kind of a foregone conclusion. Simply by virtue of being a member of the legislature does not excuse someone in asking for a gubernatorial appointment from the process to which public members would be subject as well, or at least that's my understanding, and I speak to that from experience of being a gubernatorial appointment on the CAP board. I had to go through a big process to do that, as opposed to the members that were chosen by the Senate Majority Leader and Minority Leader and whatever. They didn't have to do that. Sure. So,
and Madam Chair, I apologize. Staff advised me not to have this part for today, but since we're going down that road, I do have the, I mean, I could read the proposed alternate language.
I think as we're waiting for them to comment, that you can just get our reactions to how this would work as well.
Well,
and you don't need to amend it right now. But have you been thinking about it? And what?
Madam Chair, yes.
Where were you coming
from? The legislative members are not appointed by the governor. They're appointed in the House by the Speaker, and in the Senate by the Subcommittee on Rules and Administration. And two by the minority leader, et cetera. There are six public members appointed by the governor, so they would have to go through that process. There are eight legislators, six public members, so we have a little heavier hand in the process, but we're the ones at the end of the day that have to make those decisions. Again, the term is still at two, but I'm open to increasing that. I'll confer with Dr. Kudrowski on that. And just while we're waiting, I did take notes on Senator Ortman's comments and suggestions, which were substantiated by Dr. Kudrowski, on getting some language in the bill for the full tax committee around the governor, having these in the governor's budget and the governor making recommendations that we then have to act on. I think I've been struggling this session to figure out how do we have something that forces us to take action yet isn't an automatic expiration, which causes concern for the average taxpayer, has been highlighted, and lots of these folks here that lobby on different interest groups, and that seems to be an idea worth exploring. I made note of concerns that Mr. Eggert raised in Section 5 and 10, and I'm very happy to work with him on that. We're working on the federal conformity issue, and we'll revisit including that purpose language in an appropriate place.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Reiner, good to see you. I just have something, I guess, a little bit unrelated. In the report that we got handed to us and talked about earlier, and as well as yourself, you've talked about that I think the idea is to be revenue neutral, that this is truly a reform-minded idea. My concern is that we don't have that, as far as I can tell, I think you agreed, put into the bill. Are you open to language within the bill that constrains the legislature to the point that if they adopt any of, and we all agree, I think we all agree, that there are deductions, exemptions, credits, and things like that that need to be looked at because they're not good from a tax policy standpoint, but that we, you know, if we don't bind future legislatures, people are going to be voting on things coming out of this panel 20 years from now, potentially. And my fear is it gets to be another tool that, well, we eliminate a deduction, but we don't decrease rates, and we all know that, you know, when a deduction or exemption is eliminated, more taxes are paid. Are you open to, if we can craft some language, to require this to be a revenue-neutral process? Are you open to that?
Senator Reiner?
Madam Chair, Senator Thompson, I am. To not do that, I think, violates the principle of transparency that we're trying to get at. And, you know, it doesn't mean that I wouldn't support additional revenue in area A, B, or C, but we ought to publicly make that decision and make that decision on whether it's in budget spending or spending in the tax expenditure. But to not do that, like I said, it violates this principle of transparency that we're trying to get at by doing this work to begin with.
I appreciate that, Senator. Well, Ms. Pollack, I guess you're back to work.
Thank you, Senator Thompson, and perhaps you can visit with Senator Reinert on the issue that you just raised before the full committee. Ms. Pollack, do you have a suggestion for Senator Ortman, or Senator Ortman, would you like to speak first?
Madam Chair, I actually have worked with Ms. Pollack on two amendments that I'd like to offer. The first one relates to the federal conformity, and Senator Reinert, hopefully you'll agree to both. The first one is just to include the open items of conformity in the review process and the recommendation process by the commission, and Ms. Pollack can propose the specific language of that.
Okay. Ms. Pollack, if you would tell us the language that Senator Ortman is proposing.
Madam Chair and members, this is a correction to the oral amendment I suggested earlier.
Okay.
So after line 4.2, insert subdivision 2, period, federal conformity, period. The commission must also report on outstanding federal conformity provisions, considering the factors listed in subdivision 1.
That would be my.
Is there anyone who doesn't? We don't have it in writing, but is there anyone who doesn't understand or would object to it being offered orally? Seeing none, we have the Ortman amendment, and we the committee secretary will need it in writing, obviously, for the division report. We have that amendment in front of us, the substance of which is to ask for a review of outstanding federal conformity issues. All those in favor of the Ortman amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Ortman, you had another suggestion?
Madam Chair, the list of items to be considered and the information that would be provided in the report does not yet include the number of taxpayers that would be impacted.
Thank you.
And I think that's a really important part of this. And so I would like to propose a paragraph 8 on page 4. I don't know how many pages are left after all the amendments, but at the end of the list with 7 items to be considered, I think we should add in the number of taxpayers impacted by whatever item they're reviewing. And Ms. Pollack has language for that as well.
Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair and members, on page 4 after, I'm sorry, page 3, line 33, delete and. Page 4, line 2, delete the period and insert a semicolon and insert and. And then after 4.2, insert clause 8, the number of Minnesota taxpayers impacted by the tax expenditure.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Reinert, comment.
I would just make a suggestion in terms of keeping it very consistent with the report. Page 17 in the report addresses this very point and talks about determining the number and nature of those who pay less tax as a result of the provision. So
Well, Madam Chair.
Just a moment. Senator Reiner, what page is that? So we
page 17, under the impacts. Evaluating success requires measuring the tax provision's impacts on the stated purpose. And A is the number and nature of those who pay less tax as a result.
Well, and
it could be the number and nature of those impacted as a result.
Senator Ortman?
Madam Chair, I would think the information would be important whether it goes up or down, and then depending on what type of change it's going to be, it could be up or down. I hope we'll just leave it at the number of taxpayers that are impacted. I think that gets at the issue either way, and I think both are important.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Reiner.
My only feedback on that is I don't know that a sheer number is as informative as including some nature of the taxpayer. You know, as the report describes in the narrative along that, you know, you could say 12 businesses. Are they small businesses? Are they large businesses? I mean, I think as we make decisions on authorizing the expenditure, it's helpful to know the nature of the taxpayer in addition to just the sheer number.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Ortman.
Then I think what you're saying, Senator Reinert, if I'm hearing you right, is you want to have the nature of the impact as well as the impact of the number of taxpayers impacted.
Exactly.
And I don't have a problem with that.
Well, how about making the language that way then,
yeah.
Senator Ortman?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good change.
Ms. Pollack? Ms. Pollack, can you give us that?
The nature and the number of taxpayers impacted.
So all the technical stuff done, the language would read?
The language would read, the number of Minnesota taxpayers impacted by the tax expenditure and the nature of the impact.
Okay. Is that clear?
Madam Chair, can I take out the word Minnesota? Because there are going to be some non-Minnesota residents impacted.
You certainly may.
Thank you.
Are we clear on the amendment now? It is the number of taxpayers impacted and the nature of the impact.
That's the amendment,
okay.
Madam Chair.
All those in favor of the amendment, the Ortman amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Are there other amendments that members would like to offer at this time? Ms. Pollack, as the bill goes forward to the full tax committee, if you would provide, since there have been a number of amendments, if you would provide an unofficial engrossment,
that
would be appreciated. Okay, we have the Senate File 53 before us. Senator Eaton moves that Senate File 53, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to action by the full tax committee. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Reinert, for your work on this issue.
Thank you,
Chair
Rest, members of the committee.
Tomorrow we'll meet at what time, Senator Scoy?
I believe it's 9 o'clock. I don't have that in front of me.
At 9 o'clock, and we'll be taking up the federal conformity bill and a couple of other things as well. There being no further action or business before the division, we stand adjourned.